Hello, everyone. This is another episode of the Oxford Policy Podcast. My name is Eric Kucherenko. I am a Master of Public Policy candidate in the Blavatnik School of Government, University of Oxford. And today we will discuss the fascinating topic of state capacity, why it matters, how it's built, how it all works in practice. For this episode, my co-host will be Artem Shaipov. Artem is an international development professional focusing on the rule of law reforms. Artem holds an LLM degree from Cambridge and is a co-founder of the Professional Government Association of Ukraine, uniting Ukrainians with Western education and seeking to improve the quality of public administration in Ukraine and beyond.
Good afternoon. Building state capability is indeed an issue of paramount importance, influencing outcomes in all policy areas. And we are honored to be able to discuss this topic today with our distinguished guest, Alexander Novikov. Alexander recently completed his four-year service as the head of Ukraine's National Agency on Corruption Prevention. He led large-scale organizational transformations, implementing digitalization and introducing the objectives and key results methodology in the agency. He invested in strengthening institutional capability of the NACP, creating educational opportunities for its staff. And as a testimony of Alexander's and his team's achievements, the NACP was recognized as the International Public Body of the Year as part of the Public Sector Transformation Awards 2024 by the UK non-for-profit IESE, with track record of delivering transformation and service improvement programs across the UK. The nomination stated that the agency's data-driven approach enhanced transparency and accountability, which led to 20% improvement in the goal attainment and 30% increase in public trust. Alexander, welcome.
Hello to everyone from the capital of bravery and freedom, from Kyiv.
Alexander, I would like to start our conversation with a bit of a background story of how we came up with the idea of this podcast. It's actually inspired by a Facebook discussion of the book Building State Capability by Matt Andrews, Len Pichet, and Michael Woolcock, which you recommended to your deputy, Alexander Starodubtsev.
And this discussion enabled our collaboration with Alexander and others on designing a pilot program at the Kyiv School of Public Administration on building state capability through teaching problem-driven iterative adaptation for teams of Ukrainian public servants, business and civil society leaders working on solving complex policy issues.
Hence our first question, when you decided to run for the position of the NACP, National Agency on Corruption Prevention Head, was it your clear vision from the outset to run the agency in this evidence-based, let's say, book-based way, trying to incorporate international best practices?
I had a clear vision from outset to run agency in an evidence-based way. I was the first head of the executive body, government body in Ukraine, who was appointed in the result of open competition, with a decisive word from representatives of international technical assistance projects. It was first example in our history, now it's a usual practice. And in my motivation letter, I argued that only full digitalization of anti-corruption will allow Ukraine to make corruption uncomfortable and integrity comfortable. So first point of this clear vision was full digitalization, first of all, then unique approach that we need to create here in Ukraine. So we try to create our own Ukrainian practices to destroy corruption as a part of a culture. Of course, we use OECD and United Nations Drugs and Crime Office handbooks and methodologies, but mainly we use our Ukraine-designed 100 digitalization approach.
Right. And talking about the Building State Capability book that you recommended to your deputy, did you have enough time in office to put in practice insights from Building State Capability while you were at the NACP? And if yes, how was it? Whether anything worked? And if no, what would you see using if you had a chance?
We in Ukraine, still not in big 20, not in best 20 countries around the world. So I have not enough time for to implement all those practices from this book. But for today, National Agency on Corruption Prevention is only one agency which have already used such practices. Objects and key results methodology, management methodology, is a practical use of this PDIA approach that described in this book. And now we are in the process of implementation of the same practices in Ministry of Digitalization, in Ministry of Strategic Industries. And what is the practical product that we created using this methodology? It's anti-corruption strategy on Ukraine. It's the first strategy that we created including all stakeholders and in iterations of different problems, decisions.
Could you briefly highlight what is the main idea of this methodology?
The main idea of OKR methodology or PDIA methodology?
What do you... problem during iteration approach.
It's using of local solutions for local problems, mm-hmm. Pushing problem, driving positive deviance, try, learn, iterate, and adapt. And it is in the core of object and key results methodology at scale through diffusion. Now we in the process of scale up this try, learn, iterate, and adapt circle in other institutions. And what other part of this methodology we have used, we identified a problem, then identified action steps, then take stakeholders in a coalition. And now we are on the action stage in the implementation of anti-corruption strategy on Ukraine with all stakeholders.
Right. Very interesting. Artem, I know that you had an opportunity to learn from the authors of this very book that we are discussing in person, because you completed two programs, one on building state capability and another one on implementing public policy taught at Harvard Kennedy School. These were executive programs. What are key insights from these programs, and whether they did they go beyond what is inside the content of these books?
Yeah, thanks so much, Eric, for this question. Yes, absolutely. The book serves as a just textbook that helps to put a program into a broader context and provide participants with basic insights into challenges to build state capability and introduce the problem-driven iterative adaptation as an approach aimed at solving complex developmental challenges. But during my studies at Kennedy School, I learned a lot from Matt Andrews, Land Bridget, Michael Woolcock, Salima Samji, Rob Wilkinson, and other great professors. And my key takeaways include, but are not limited to, the following. So I learned how to diagnose the level of complexity of a policy challenge. I better understood the difference between solution and leader-driven change and problem-driven iterative adaptation as different methodologies to addressing policy issues. I learned about the power of multi-agent leadership, how to unleash it and how to harness it to solve a complex policy challenge. And I also learned about the progress principle and started to appreciate inquiry more than advocacy.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I remember the example that they cited of cross America trip, which seems to be quite an easy endeavor in 2015, but it might have been very different in 1830 something. And they just try to exemplify the difference of complexity of different challenges, right?
Absolutely. And my question to Alexander, How do you see complex policy challenges? So what, in your view, defines complexity?
In my view, complexity is the situation when you have no decisions on your table for such problems. And the problem of corruption is the main problem for a lot of countries, even for G7 countries. So to fight corruption and to reduce level of corruption in different spheres, you need to take a lot of stakeholders to brainstorm initiatives and to brainstorm what is culture that we need to destroy corruption as a cultural issue. So in medical sphere, in all spheres of governance, in educational sphere, you have very serious problems that you need to use PDIA methodology, and where you need to create teams that can deliver changes. And it's not only for Ukraine, for every country. Today, in Hungary, they have protests against corruption in the Hungarian government. And the same situation we have in different countries.
Mm. Alexander, you've already mentioned that this problem, the reiteration approach, is very closely linked to the OKR methodology described in the book Measures What Matters by John Doerr, which you're also actively promoting in the intellectual circles of Ukraine. Could you a little bit describe why this methodology is qualitatively better than more conventional ones, such as KPI, and how did it work in practice when you implemented it in the National Agency on Corruption Prevention?
Objects and key results is the very easy methodology to implement in any organization. You don't need a comprehensive structure and special departments for implementing this methodology. You just need a clear vision of your team and visual future that you want to create, a clear mission, strategic goals, and then you need to cascade these goals on your team, but not only from top down, but bottom up, to create alignment of every person in your team with strategic goals and to connect mission with the goals of teams and every individual in the team. In this methodology, no more than 50% of goals can to be created by the head of institution or the head of departments or deputy of the head. 50% of the goals have to be brainstormed and defined for each quarter by individuals. And this creates it is a booster for implementing decisions and initiatives on all level on organization. What is very important, it's full transparency of the goals of the CEO institution and everyone institution, and cross-functional work of every team and every person. It creates, according to the measurement of John Doerr, who promotes this methodology, 10 times more result in the organizations which are using this methodology.
Right. And based on what you've just described, it looks like, as in many other contexts, a lot of things depend on people. And in a summary video that you made for the NACP's official media channels, you mentioned that the most important decisions were made in 2020 at the start of your work at the agency, and those were hiring decisions. And in the context of building state capability, how did you shape the hiring process to ensure the efficiency and effectiveness of your team? And to what extent was it merit-based? And is there anything that you would do differently if you had another chance?
In the center of our approach, recruitment approach, was values, but we defined, and is values for NACP now, but we defined our values and values-based recruitment approach only in 2022 in autumn. So we lost 2 years of values-based recruitment. I recommend to define the values when you start your work in organization. For every CEO and for every employer, I recommend it. Why? Because you, if you align with values of organization, if your values are aligned with the values of organization, you will be inspired and the organization will have 10 more results and you will have 10 more results. So it was my mistake that I started to use this values-based recruitment approach only after 2 years on my position.
That's very interesting what you're saying about the importance of, let's say, corporate culture, if we can say that about state services. Perhaps we can talk about the culture of civil service. How in practice does this statement, this set of values that you defined, actually transform into everyday routine work of your organization?
Yeah, and just to add to what you mentioned, the values that Alexander declared, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Alexander, are integrity, ambition, development, responsibility, and interaction.
Yeah, values is the framework for every decision in our organization, in National Agency on Corruption Prevention. And for example, if we need to work in any in some our projects with external stakeholders, it's everyone can make a decision to ask everyone inside the organization to join to our projects. And no one need to discuss it with me or with the head of the departments. And for example, a culture of transparency. And we work with International Working Group of Sanctions in Stanford University. And we share all our findings directly to a special portal, Sanctions and Nazika.gov.ua, with everyone in the world, because we believe that teamwork is the best value to achieve scale up results. And of course, we are as an agency and a team which have to build integrity in Ukraine. We are an example of integrity behavior.
Right. Yeah, that's indeed very insightful. And a couple of questions, follow-up questions, basically. I was wondering, how did the mission and values interact, and how did they play out in the practice of your leadership team? And another question would be, how did they influence your and your team's decision-making on a day-to-day basis? And I was wondering if you could give a couple of examples to illustrate those.
One of our values is development. Make tomorrow better than today. And after a year of implementation objects and key result methodology and of communication of these values, and we need everyday communication from C level to all levels organization of the values and mission, we had unique situation when every team create a special learning platforms for other teams inside the organization or outside the organization for different goals that have to be achieved by our team. For example, when our legal team work with the draft of the agreements for our procurements, they created a Google form and then a Telegram channel for every public government body in the country, not only for the ACP, but for every public government body. It's about ambition, not to work only for your personal goals or personal goals of your organization, but for the common goals of all public institutions in the country. And we shared with official letters this Google form of draft of the agreements to all public institutions. And we did the same with a lot of NACP projects, for example, for claims from citizens. And we shared it to different organizations. And when we work, for example, with the claims of whistleblowers, we created a special portal for 90,000 of public and local governments. Why we do it? Because our mission is to build integrity not only in an ACP, not only in public sector, but in all society, in local level, and you have to do it with right values, because you're not to achieve integrity when you are not scale up results on different institutions.
Mm. The way you talk about it actually demonstrates that yes, this culture defined by mission and values indeed had a profound impact on the way NACP worked. It's not just hollow statements, it really influenced everyday running of the organization. Another defining aspect of capacity development that you implemented was creating new development opportunities for professionals. In particular, staff of the NACP had an opportunity to take a course with the business school of Kyiv Mohyla Academy. This is very interesting. Why do you think that officials working on the problem of corruption prevention need a course in the business school? And what was the content of the school? Was it of the course? Was it tailored for the needs of your institution, or it was a more general course? How did you evaluate the impact of this course on the work of the institution?
The effectiveness of every team and the state and every person is depends from maturity of management system. How we manage ourselves, how we manage our organizations, and how we manage government and whole state. So when you work with business school, you understand and you understand a right mindset that you need to improve processes from initial to manage level to define and then to defined level, measurable and optimizing level. We are using CMMI methodology of five levels of management, and studying in business schools allowed our team to understand how to grow themselves, how to grow their teams, and all organization to the highest level of maturity. Why it is important, maturity? Because when you on the highest level of maturity, it is not possible to be not effective or to be corrupted. The main streams of studying in business schools for our team members was system of planning, coaching, communication, values, mission, cross-cultural issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and if I may step in here, Alexander, you also prepared a guide for a leader that includes advice on building processes in the organization, appointing an integrity officer, screening job candidates for compliance with key values, identifying channels for whistleblowing, ensuring internal audits of divisions' effectiveness, and other things. And my question is whether this is your recipe for a leader to leave a lasting legacy in the organization, or is there anything more to it?
Every leader needs his own unique approach to build the effectiveness, to build the integrity within the organization. It's only an example of concrete steps that we propose to organizations. There are no one receipt for all situations, and OECD Public Integrity Handbook recommend just directions where to move. It can be values-based or compliance-based strategy where you use more cultural tools or more rule-based tools. But this guide for top managers based on this OECD best practices examples, based on the theories of management, and create a clear vision what integrity means in the on the highest fifth level maturity of management. What it means that you need to create a vision. What value do we create as a team? You need to create and to define mission. Why do we exist? And it drives everyone when you understand why you exist. You need to define values. How do we act? And long-term goals. How will we succeed in the long run? And then we are using the OKR methodology, because it's about quarterly goals. What will we achieve this quarter? And it allows everyone, every team, every organization in 1 year have 4 year cycles. So you are improving 4 times quicker.
Yeah, that makes sense. And a question to Eric. After earning your master's degree in public policy from Oxford, whether you would be willing to serve Ukraine at the institution like the NACP, having learned so much from Alexander about its setup, its values, processes, and other important things? And what the government of Ukraine should do to get people like you thinking about joining Ukraine's public service?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to return to Ukraine, and I will definitely do that upon completing my studies here this summer. I think that what really matters in terms of attracting young talent to civil service is actually making institutions transparent, demonstrating that there is a certain culture of growth that creates opportunities for young professionals to develop themselves. I think that this is what Alexander did in the national agency. I think, unfortunately, many government institutions still lack that. It's difficult for them to compete in terms of remuneration, in terms of resources, but what can be done, and I think it can drastically improve the current situation, is really creating a culture where opportunities are created for talented youth to grow, to undertake more responsibilities, and to deliver, not just to perform certain tasks that might seem mundane and administrative, but really challenge oneself I think feel the impact of one's own work. I would say this is crucial for me as well, for many colleagues of mine that are considering different trade-offs related to working in the public service. I think that it's really crucial that institutions invest in marketing themselves and promoting this internal culture that they create. And then the public attitude towards public service will change, even though it may be still be difficult to compare and compete with the public with the private sector. I think actually the same happens in the West. Sometimes private sector may be more appealing, but lots of people make this conscientious decision to go into civil service to serve their country and make an impact. So the possibility, the opportunity to make an impact is something that would definitely attract me to work in a particular government institution in Ukraine.
Yeah, that sounds very promising. Looking forward to seeing you in Ukraine in public service one day.
Yeah, and I want to add goal and the aim of objects and key result methodology and the fifth level of management is to create the transparency of every government body and to give a feeling of the impact for everyone who are inside and to attract outside other to work.
Yeah, thanks, Alexander. Just one more question regarding the results of your impressive work at the National Agency on Corruption Prevention. Do you think that the changes that you implemented at the NACP have reached the level of irreversibility, defined as the highest level of reform by Michael Barber in his book, How to Run the Government So That Citizens Benefit and Taxpayers Do Not Go Crazy? So whether you achieve this or not.
I know that the culture of effectiveness and integrity and the culture of OKRs have already vaccinated new head. So I believe that this culture of transparency and effectiveness will grow under new leadership. And moreover, now I personally, as an advisor, I work with our Ministry of Digitalization, with other government bodies to promote and to implement the culture of transparency and OKRs in other institutions. Why? Because we need a human-centered management systems. And OKRs is human-centered management system. What we need else to implement it? We need to understand it in the minds of ministers and the minds of head of institutions and even in the minds of heads of private companies, that in 21st century, it is not possible to work on the highest level of possible level of effectiveness without human-centered management systems.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense. Eric?
Yeah. Alexander, thank you for this insight. This is very interesting. As our last question, we would ask you, what would you say to our listeners, academic and professional community of the University of Oxford, to encourage them on their path to building state capacity in their own countries?
And while Alexander is thinking, just a quick follow-up question. So we were discussing several books and different materials that helped you come up with these brilliant ideas and initiatives. And I was wondering if you could recommend any other sources of knowledge for the listeners of this podcast that would help them better understand your philosophy and become better leaders.
Yeah. I want to recommend Team of Teams. It's a brilliant book of General McChrystal. Leadership and the New Science of Margaret Wheatley. Of course, work rules from Laszlo Bock from Google, super thinking, and fifth discipline from Peter Senge, and thinking in systems from Daniela Meadows, and the last one, measures what is matter from John Doerr. It's these seven books allows you to build a human-centered management system. What can I recommend to the listeners? I recommend to build integrity because and state capacity as a part of integrity, because it's only by one way to effectiveness and to long-term life goals and to the peace on our planet.
Yeah, thank you so much, Alexander, for taking the time to share your experience, insights, and thoughts with us. And it's been a great pleasure and privilege learning from you. And I'm looking forward to working with you on implementing the PDAA course at Kyiv School of Public Administration.
Yeah, we wish you all the best in your efforts to build capability in the Ukrainian state further, and look forward to welcome you again in the future.
Thank you. Let's build integrity together.
Perfect. Absolutely. Thank you.